live. What I'm saying is, ain't nobody gonna do this for us but us. Talk about a Barack Obama. Don't even talk to me about Barack Obama. Let's talk about Marcus Garvey. You know what I'm saying? The question ain't whether we vote for white power and white face or white power and black face. The question is whether we will be an independent people, or whether we remain colonized and oppressed until we are wiped out. This is African internationalism in action, y'all. Y'all need to get up on this. When we say we have to have power in our own hands, here we're talking about the African working class. What we can do is to have an organized capacity of the African workers in alliance with the poor peasants who takes state power for itself. Then we can begin to say we got justice in our own hands.
Africa live.
Just raise up these incredible African leaders that we've had. It's critical that as African people we strive to be like them. I'm talking about the Marcus Garveys. I'm talking about the Fannie Lou Hamers. I'm talking about the Malcolm X's, the Kwame Nkrumahs, and today we have Omali Eshetela.
Brothers and sisters, Africans at home and abroad, welcome to Africa Live.
Woo, and welcome to Africa Live. On Tuesday, November 4th, Barack Obama was elected as the first president of the imperialist United States. While there has been much discussion about what this means for black people in the world, we felt it important to bring the forum here to uhururadio.com, the voice of the International African Revolution. To participate in this discussion on today, we have in the studio with us Omali Eshetela, chairman of the African Socialist International, who is for more than 40 years been a leader in the International African Revolution. We also have on the line with us renowned journalist and editor of blackagendareport.com, Brother Glenn Ford. On the line from London, England, we have Louisa Kinshasa, Secretary General of the African Socialist International. Woo, and welcome to Africa Live. And on with us in Freetown,
on Tuesday,
Sierra Leone,
Barack Obama was elected as the first.
Who was that?
We also have on the line from Freetown, Sierra Leone, Cherno Alpha Mba, who is the director of the Africanist Movement, where black presidents and prime ministers have been the norm for several decades. And I'd like to, first of all, And we also have in the studio with us Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People Solidarity Committee. So I'd like to, first of all, begin this discussion. Uhuru Lewizi. If you could please cut your the broadcast of Uhuru Radio down, we're hearing a bit of feedback.
Okay, did I catch it? Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you well.
I can't hear you now.
You can't hear me.
Sierra Leone.
If you can cut off the broadcast on your
computer. Completely. Okay.
Yes.
I'm not sure what to do.
For several decades.
What should I do?
First of all,
if you can,
and we also have in the studio.
Oh, I see. Okay,
I'm
with you. Yeah.
African People Solidarity Committee. So I'd like to first of all,
Okay, great. So first of all, I want to welcome everybody. To this very significant discussion, and thank you all for being here to participate in it. We might name this discussion the Great Black Hope Discussion, or Great Black Hopeless Discussion, speaking of how many have viewed Barack Obama and his election as the first black president of the United States. How about we begin the discussion with the question that everybody is asking, and that question is Obama's election going to mean a different reality for African people in the U.S.? Chairman, if I can begin with you in answering this question.
Well, that was a softball pitch. I mean, but I think we need to do more than, I think that we cannot trivialize the significance of the election itself. And the thing that makes that very obvious is the jubilation that has been experienced by African people all around the world. Throughout this country, I did not, for example, stay up waiting for the election returns, but was awakened in the middle of the night by gunfire and by African screaming in jubilation with the election. And as we will probably hear from comrades in Sierra Leone, West Africa, and in London, England, similar experiences with black people there occurred. And I've seen evidence otherwise of how people made the assumptions that this election was going to be a profound transformation, not only in this country, but for people, and particularly African people around the world. But in addition to just seeing African people acting a certain way, I have seen and heard expressions by North Americans or white people, French persons, etc. So it is not something that can be trivialized. There is a tremendous expectation assumption of power by African people as a consequence of this election. But to answer the question, no. We cannot count on the election of Barack Obama meaning anything meaningful and positive in terms of the conditions of existence for African people in this country. And I think this is something that we're going to have to concentrate on, because the fact is that most Africans have, many Africans in our experience have indicated that it doesn't matter in a certain way. I mean, they've said that, okay, he didn't say anything about us, but he didn't have to, or he couldn't say anything about us, or he couldn't have a program that addressed our interests, or otherwise he could not have got elected. And but having said that, there is an assumption in among masses of people that there some power has come to us as African people in this country as a consequence of this election. Even a young brother I was talking to on yesterday, he said that now we've got the power. We've got the power. The question is, do we know what to do with it? So there's an assumption out there that African people have power, and I think that's something that we're going to have to work with. I want to say that while I'm speaking here about the implications this has immediately for African people, I think that we have to be concerned that I have always been so happy to say that African people have not taken some opportunistic stance in this country, that our stance in this country has always been one that that has been in solidarity with oppressed peoples around the world. When America said we want to go kill Iraqis, the African population in this country, 77% of black people in this country were opposed to it. When America fought in Vietnam, the majority of African people, even in Vietnam, fought against it. And when America talks about treating people badly, generally speaking, African people have been on the other side of the question. Now what we are confronted with is an Obama who is holding up the same basic imperialist principles that America has stood for all along. There's no statement, even with this Iraqi war, where he talked out of both sides of his mouth about the war. He never was able to denounce the war, first of all, as a crime that was committed against the people in, of Iraq. Instead, he talks about it in terms of a war that there was no real weapons of mass destructions, and or that it was a war that was problematic for other kinds of reasons. Never because of what it meant in terms of taking people's freedom. And now he talks about leaving thousands of troops, and the thing that goes unspoken, of course, is the so-called contractors who are civilians who fight to kill people in Iraq that have been hired by the American government. There's no discussion about removing them. He talks about sending more troops to occupy Afghanistan and keep those poor people oppressed, and about even attacking Pakistan. Obama has said this. So we're looking at the same basic warmongering principles as we must see, because America is an imperialist country. It's not an imperialist country because Obama was elected. In fact, Obama was elected precisely and put forth by white power imperialists precisely because it was an imperialism suffering serious crisis, and that it could not function in the same old way anymore. It's imperialism now with a new face that is not historically associated with the oppression of peoples around the world. And so that's one thing that makes his election really helpful for imperial white power. Secondly, Obama has to say something and do something immediately about AFRICOM, which is the U.S. military command that has been established for the purpose of contending with China for the resources in Africa and for maintaining the status quo in Africa so that there can be an ongoing extraction of wealth from Africa, the national homeland of black people all around the world. Obama has to say something about and do something about the fact that one out of every eight African young men in America is in prison on any given day in this country. Or the fact that the unemployment rate and the whole crisis that impacts and has impacted on our community for a very long time. So the thing is that Obama was elected. He was elected with the highest percentage of white people in this country since the Civil Rights Act was passed, and most white people deserted the Democratic Party in national elections. He has the largest, huge Democratic majority in the Congress, and there is no reason now that he's elected with this majority that he cannot say that he's going to fix the contradictions that African people are confronted with in this country. Already he has begun a process of undermining the significance of blackness. This whole comment that he just made the other day about the traditional puppy that's being brought to the White House, when reporters asked him what kind of dog it was, and he responded that it's a mutt just like me. is again a part of the ongoing process that Obama has been involved in since running to undermine the significance of being an African person. So there you are.
I want to appreciate that, and I want to get back to the Mutt statement too. That's something that I really like to talk about. I want to ask Brother Ford, in a article that you wrote on May 28th, entitled "Barack Obama versus Black Self-Determination," you stated Obamaism, a thoroughly a corporate political concoction soaked with banalities and wrapped in fraudulent brown packaging. I like the wording already, but it's, you say it presents a clear and present danger to perhaps the greatest legacy of the Black freedom movement, yes. African Americans' embrace of their right to self-determination. Yes. What is the impact that that you see Obama's winning this election have on the question of self-determination in terms of you know, the Black people's demand for self-determination?
Well, certainly in Obama's debut on the national stage at the Democratic National Convention in 2004, he made his most important proclamation, and that was that there is no Black America. So certainly an entity that does not exist has no right to self-determination. He's been very consistent in that. Now, this great victory that we supposedly won this past Tuesday, it's being heralded as some kind of New Day. It's like a 9/11, only beneficial in that everything has changed. But nobody can present evidence of actual material change. What it seems to be is a celebration of a significant minority of white people showing themselves to be willing to vote for a very particular Black individual. Now, what are the ramifications of that willingness by a minority of white people to vote for that particular Black individual who dedicated his entire campaign to getting a significant minority of white people to vote for himself? I suppose that we could look forward to some kind of change in white attitudes or a kind of crystallization of white attitudes. So then we ask the question, well, what kind of change or crystallization can we expect? They I believe, have already told us what that white opinion is now, this white guiding opinion, and that is that Black folks really have no specific grievances anymore, that's all passé, that's something of yesterday. And if you yesterday in market-driven America, that's worse than being dead. and that they will no longer give any legitimacy to specific Black grievances. Now, given that they are still a majority in this country, I think that is a very serious and dramatic state of mind, if that's the one that has been reached definitively, that Black folks already have, as the brother was talking about, the power, that it is our president as opposed to theirs, and therefore we can effect any change we want through executive power as if he answers to us. Yeah, that's a very dangerous attitude for white folks to have. And so maybe things have changed, but I don't think for the better.
Now, Penny Hess, Glenn Ford just, you know, he gave us some idea of you know, why white people might have voted for Obama. What do you think about that? Why did white people vote for Obama?
Well, I think that
this is not a white expert.
Well, actually, I think that the chairman put it really well a while ago when he said that, you know, African people were voting for Obama with the belief that it would result in black power, and white people were voting for him precisely because they understood that that would not be true. And I think that there is this feeling, you know, it's the kind of thing that, okay, we can move forward from this point on, we can all get along. But, I mean, it's clear that Obama is making it clear that this means that African people have to live or stand up to the white determination of what African people should be. And he started with that comment about he wasn't going to make it illegal for people to have their pants, wear their pants low, but he wanted to say that, you know, and he specifically said brothers should pull up their pants, it's really offensive. And that was one of the first things he said in an interview, you know, following this. And, I mean, it's just really clear because he is, the probability of the Attorney General being this man, Eric Holder, who is an African who is, I think, was Obama's law, in his law firm, or is his legal advisor, but who was the Attorney General interim under Bush before Ashcroft was selected, and who was the lawyer for Chiquita Banana in the clash, or in the case against the death squads in Colombia. He defended Chiquita Banana Corporation. And he's, you know, I think he's been, other people might know this better, but some kind of role of district attorney of Washington, D.C., and responsible for the, you know, huge numbers of African men that go to prison and who are framed up under these laws, and carries out the counterinsurgency against the African community. I mean, that's probably who's going to be selected as the Attorney General. And, you know, not to mention the other totally right-wing, Rahm Emanuel, and that the probability is that Obama is going to keep Robert Gates as Secretary of the Defense, who was straight-up CIA and neocon, you know, warmonger and all that. So it's just, there's no change whatsoever. I mean, it's been summed up really clearly, and white people are under the illusion now that we're going to have a better image and save America's image abroad. And they're proud of that, and they, you know, it's going to save the position of most white people benefiting from U.S. exploitation inside this country and around the world. That's how they see it.
And I want to come back to you about some of these people who he's putting in his cabinet, including Rahm Emanuel and some of others who we can anticipate seeing, like Madeleine Albright and Brzezinski.
Susan Rice.
I'd like to go to Cherno Alpha Mba, who is the director of the Africanist movement in West Africa, and the director of organization for the African Socialist International. Cherno, you're based in Sierra Leone, where there have been black heads of state since the 1960s and I believe the 1950s. What has rule by a black president brought to Sierra Leone?
Well, like you already said, I think this excitement that we are witnessing on the part of Africa about the election of Obama as president of the U.S. is something that should be seen as a new phenomenon, because we witnessed the same excitement among Africans in Africa during the late 50s, early 60s, right up to the 1990s, when people like Mandela and others were power. So, you know, nothing has significantly changed. What we saw was the increase in the misery of the conditions that we face in Africa. And I think that, you know, what we have witnessed is continuous poverty, backwardness, and the facilitation of the steps of the reasons that we have as African people in on the continent. So I think that election of Obama has given the U.S. and the rest of the capitalist world some form of legitimacy to maintain that kind of relationship. And we should also know that you know, while the U.S. is faced with a serious contention with the Chinese in Africa. And, you know, that is one thing that perhaps the election of Obama has given the U.S. an edge over the Chinese in Africa. And most of the African governments here, you know, have, you know, pledged their support and their willingness to work with the U.S. government. And we know exactly what that means because the resources in Africa, like in Sierra Leone, most of the corporations are owned by the U.S. government, by the British and various European nations. So there's not going to be any significance in the change that has happened, the so-called change that has happened in the U.S. is one that will facilitate the increased set of resources in Africa and as well increase the misery of our people here. So I don't think that, you know, this should be seen as a new phenomenon. Like I've already said, we have seen situations in Africa where the so-called most progressive at the time, South Africans came to power. We have the situation in Zimbabwe and, you know, in Tanzania that was and, you know, now we have over 50 black people who are called presidents in Africa, and our conditions have grown worse, you know, at a tectonic speed. I think it's part of the same strategy that has been employed by the imperialists to facilitate the theft of the resources to maintain the past relationship that we have with the students. So that is the way I see it, and we should not expect any significant change.
Luwezi, go ahead, come
on. Oppression.
I'd like to go to Luwezi Kinshasa, who is the Secretary General of the African Socialist International and is based in England. For some time, you know, we've seen the U.S. act in a way that created difficult relations between itself and some of the other imperialists, in a sense. And do you anticipate that Obama's election will change how the U.S. is viewed, even by some of the other imperialists like England, like France, and whatnot? Do you anticipate anything changing, or is anything changing as we see it?
On a government levels, the European leaders who criticized Bush for his unilateralism, they have been welcoming Obama, and they've been saying they hope Obama will return to multilateralism approach, where he will consult with other imperialist forces so they can attack the rest of the world. Mm. That has been really what I have heard from the French leader, Sarkozy, mm-hmm. and some leaders also in the UK said the same thing, and the German leader. They definitely want to work together instead of having the US setting the terms of imperialism, aggression, looting of the rest of the world, but they want to be equal partners, something like that. So that's one sector. Another sector is basically saying they're not sure Obama will do that. They believe Obama will, you know, will stick to Bush's agenda, basically, will continue to use U.S. military force regardless if the rest of imperialism agree or does not agree with it. But the really confusion is on a popular level, where a lot of people believe Obama is the change of the U.S. imperialism. For somehow, you know, when just you listen to the news for the last week, that has been ongoing, including, when I say believing it is a change, you know, white people and the black people, and the black people, including those who are supposed to be black nationalists, you know. Yeah, that's where we are now.
We're speaking here with various forces, Chairman Amalia Shetela of the African People's Socialist Party and Chairman of the African Socialist International, Glenn Ford, the editor of BlackAgendaReport.com, Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, Luwezi Kinshasa, the Secretary General of the ASI, and Chernow Alpha Mba, the Director of Organization of the ASI, based in various places, including the U.S., Europe, and in Africa. I'd like to invite our listeners to participate in the discussion that we're having here. You can call one of our numbers. The U.S. number is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. The UK number is 020-8133-6629, and that's country code 44. You can call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. The Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase, or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. I'd like to continue. There's Chairman Nkrumah talked about neocolonialism, or white power in blackface, as the last stage of colonialism. The last stage of imperialism. Thank you. And in a statement released on November 6th, you stated, "The fact is that the election of Obama to the U.S. presidency represents the highest stage of neocolonialism." Can you explain this further?
Yeah, it's a, you know, neocolonialism was something that became necessary for imperial white power when Africans and other peoples around the world grew politically conscious enough to resist white domination, direct white domination. All around the world, that happened. And the enemy was clearly and easily identifiable as white, foreign, etc. And now what happened, of course, is that what Nkrumah refers to as neocolonialism, which is still colonialism, but it's a new colonialism. It is, in this instance, and throughout Africa, it is white power in a black face. So you have a situation where there is often great ceremonies attached to the lowering of the flag of the colonizer and the raising of the flag of the newly independent people, and swearing in of black leaders on the one hand, but on the other hand, the economy of the country is controlled and owned by the same people who controlled and owned it before. So effectively what happens in a neo-colonial situation, instead of direct white rule, there was indirect rule, a rule of white people carried out by Africans. So Africans became effectively managers of economies controlled and owned by white people and had the basic responsibility of maintaining the order and suppressing any force that might try to overturn the relationship that imperialism has with African people. So that's been something that's been used all over Africa. In the last period of struggle, we've seen people involved around the world overthrowing neocolonialism. When the Cubans successfully had a revolution in 1959, they overthrew a neocolonial puppet, Batista, who had been supported, put there by the United States government. The Nicaraguans did it with Somoza in 1979. And people, that's been a fundamental component of struggle of people around the world, taking back their resources for themselves and getting rid of substitute forces who have been put there to represent imperialism and imperialist interests at the expense of the people. Now you have the U.S., a world power, a so-called superpower, that many people see as the most powerful leader of the whole world, the presidency of which, experiencing crisis internally, experiencing crisis as a consequence of peoples around the world tired of white power and struggling to take back their own resources for themselves. Now the U.S. Elevates someone, again, not historically associated with white power, and he becomes the president. And one thing that's really significant about this presidency that reinforces the whole concept of neocolonial and indirect rule, whereas in America and in Europe and places like that, you have indigenous peoples, forces who control and own and control the economy. In America, Africans do not own and control the economy. And so what you have is this person who is a representative of the forces who own and control the economy, just like you have in South Africa, where the white people still own 87% of all the land there. And then the black forces who function as government simply manage resources and keep the peace in order to make sure that they continue to extract that wealth from African people. And that's what we have on a global level now. In fact, I call it an international brotherhood of neocolonialism that Obama has created.
That brings me to another question, really. For Glenn Ford, in an article on another previous article on Black Agenda Report, you expressed great disdain for the abdication of responsibility of Black leaders in not demanding anything of Obama, instead giving him a free pass. Does this refusal to demand anything before the election, will that prove problematic for African people's ability to make demands on him now that he's been elected?
Yeah, you can't turn people, masses of people, on and off like a light switch. The time to have had some kind of impact, if that were possible, would have been before the primaries. And I'll give you an example. When Bruce Dixon, my managing editor, and I confronted Obama back in 2003 when he was running for in the Democratic U.S. senatorial primary, confronted him about his having dropped his anti-war speech from his campaign website and for his name popping up on the list of the Democratic Leadership Council, which is the right wing of the Democratic Party, the corporate bagman of the Democratic Party. When Bruce Dixon and I confronted him, we were able engage him for a whole month in argument over his positions on some basic issues like the Iraq War, like universal health care, and like NAFTA, and we made him, although he was kicking and screaming, demand that the DLC take his name off of their list, and he for a very little while put his anti-war speech back on his own campaign website. Well, that's because he was ranked number four at that time in the race for the Democratic senatorial nomination, and he couldn't make anybody afford to make anybody mad, and so he did respond to us. He was in a similar situation in the months before the first primaries, in which he didn't want to make anybody angry. He certainly didn't want to make white folks angry, but if we had shown any propensity to question him, he would have tried not to make us angry, I believe. Anyway, at least it was worth a shot. but nobody took that shot, and that was a total abdication of any responsibility as leaders. And frankly, having watched the behavior of Black activists who considered themselves to be progressive leaders during this critical period, those who showed that they didn't have a spine during that period, I will never trust again.
Yeah.
I'd like to go to Chairman Wally Sotelo, because you talked about this before too, in terms of people who were supposed to be revolutionaries who did nothing. I mean, you saw nobody do anything except for the Uhuru movement in St. Petersburg, Florida. So can you say?
Well, I wanted to pass this on and share this discussion also with Comrade Glenn, because I have seen there are two particular forces I can identify, one of which you know and I think have debated, Amiri Baraka, and another comrade I used to be relatively close to, who is now in North Carolina with a Black Workers Organization. And they have written what I have found to be extraordinarily difficult to understand, almost purely abstract, dogmatic kind of Marxist defenses of, I should say, well, of Barack Obama. And it is not the same as having said, look at the motion that has been generated as a consequence of this election, and let's find a way to tap into it to push a legitimate agenda. It has been somehow finding where no one else could see it, not the millions of white people who supported him, not the millions, not the scores of white people who gave him more than $500 million. No one else could see this anti-imperialist, stream or tendencies, you know, lurking beneath the surface. They have discovered that his election, his being put forth and now being elected represent something that is positive from the perspective of the intentions of Obama, as opposed to the possibility that something positive can be drawn from it as a consequence of how we decide to struggle at this moment, one. Secondly, there is also, and it's really interesting because this is sort of on the other side of that, there is also a definable sector of forces who have been that has been opposed to Obama, and that has been characterized as the old guard. There's, you know, we've heard this notion that somehow that people who are active and in motion and have some history of struggle who oppose Obama represents sort of like an old guard, like the past or something to that effect. You were going to say something, Brother Eddie?
Let me. I want to open it up because we have people who are in our studio audience who want to ask questions and actually contribute as well. So,
is Brother Eddie here? Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, let me first say that I am an Obama supporter. So you're going to be able to tell by some of my opinions, some of my views. But you know, basically, most of my views have been shaped by my past history. So, but I think more than anything, I just have kind of a question in general. Basically, and I guess it's real general, like, what would you have him do? And it's just that simple.
Okay. Good question.
Well, what's the question?
What did you say, Glenn?
I'm awaiting the someone to declare the order of answering. I'll wait my turn.
First of all, just for those who didn't hear it, the brother asked, he said he's an Obama supporter, and he asked, what would we have him do? Glenn, you started to get at it. Go ahead.
Well, I'd have him rescind the bailout and take back whatever money's not been spent so far. This bailout is an attempt to rescue from death and near death the capitalist apparatus that decided how our country would be developed and how our neighborhoods would be underdeveloped and de-developed. And those are the perpetrators of what we describe as the ghetto. They're the ones who shaped it through their policies. They're the people who have the most direct blame for the whole contours of oppression that we can actually see. And yet Barack Obama was shamelessly eager to, it seemingly without even having read it, endorse this $700 billion bailout, and then promise that the perpetrator of that bailout giveaway could become a part of his administration. So since we're in the transition period, I would have him asking that as much of those funds as he mistakenly said should go to bailing out banks should be held in a kind of escrow until he becomes president, and then he can create some people-serving institutions with that money. Of course, none of that's going to happen, but that was the nature of the question.
Penny, go ahead.
I thought that was a really important answer. And also, you know, if we look at the situation, Obama is going to be president with an almost, complete Democratic majority in Congress. And he would have the ability to really do anything that he wanted to do, but he is not going to. He's not going to repeal the Patriot Act. He's not going to repeal the mandatory minimum laws, the three strikes you're out laws, all the laws that frame up African people day after day when it is, you know, mostly on the question of drugs, when it is white people who are the majority of drug users and sellers in this country, and he's not going to put money for genuine economic development to change the wealth gap that is very stark and growing every day inside this country in terms of the African community. He's not going to change the fact that more African men are forced to be in prison than are in college. I mean, he's not going to do any of that. He's never made a promise to do it. He's never said he would. He said he's going to do the opposite. So, I mean, every person that he is putting in his cabinet are people who are continuing, you know, not just capitalism, but really the strain of Bush neocon kind of capitalism. All these people are the same thing, the free trade, the ultra, you know, white nationalist kind of forces that are continuing to be in there.
Go ahead, Chairman. Well, I think certainly we'd have to add to that, and I think Africans have a responsibility. I mean, Obama, somebody's got their...
Luigi, I think you have the broadcast going over there.
But
it's not with me, you know.
Okay.
You cut your volume down a little bit.
But somebody, you know, Obama crawled on his belly down to Miami and promised the Jews there that he was going to give them Jerusalem, you know, which no, you know, first of all, it's stolen land that we're talking about in the first place, you know, that's there, that, you know, an illegitimate white nationalist settler state that is a military outpost of U.S. imperialism there to protect what they consider their oil interests. And, but no president at any time in the history before has said that they would give them Jerusalem. Jerusalem, even from the most reactionary presidents in this country, has been something that they talked about would be a shared capital of both the Arabs and the Israelis or the Jews. And so, you know, obviously Africans and other well-meaning people in this country have to demand U.S. out, the U.S. Africum out of Africa. The absolute disbandment of that entity. He has to get rid of the NORTHCOM, which is the military base that's been the thousands of troops right out of Iraq that has been put in this country. That's called the Northern Command, right? For the purpose of putting down struggles and, you know, natural disasters and things like that, which is the closest thing we've ever seen to have an actual military, U.S. military being used for controlling civilian population in this country since the Civil War. I mean, those are some things that, and then, of course, this horrible thing with the prisons that African people are confronted with, things that he needs to deal with. If he only made a statement that I have some concerns about the numbers of black people being in prison and whether or not they were justly put there, if he could make a statement about reparations, that African people whose blood and sweat built the political economy of this country, that the bankers are now giving thrown away, that African, perhaps there is a possibility that this sector of the population, whose inheritance from their labor has been stolen, etc., and therefore reparations might be in order. Those are some of the things that we would have him say and do. That's right. And it's not anything different from any of the other people who consider themselves a part of his constituency. Has demanded of him. But I would tell you this, not only is he not going to speak specifically to the interests of African people, Obama is going to go out of his way to appeal to right-wingers who were Bush supporters and who were against him, white people, before he ever addresses a question that's important to African people. And he's going to get a free ride because the same Africans who said that he can't say anything because he won't get elected are now going to say, well, you got to give him time, you know, et cetera. And while all the others are saying that there is no time, he's got to hit the ground running because of the political economy, et cetera. He can make certain kinds of determinations. And Bush and everybody else with this kind of commanding majority, with the kind of mandate that he appears to have had, you know, he has the ability, if he wants to make those kinds of determinations. But, yeah.
I don't know if anybody else wants to contribute. Yeah.
What I would say is the first thing you should do is end all the proxy wars in Africa, starting from Congo and Sudan, Chad, and other places where the U.S. is involved, is actively involved in funding, training the forces involved in proxy wars in Africa, as you know. Already over 5 million people killed in the Congo, over 500,000 people killed in Sudan. I don't even know in Chad how many people are being killed there. And also, any occupation of Haiti, you know, the U.S. and the French overthrew the government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and is under occupation, where you have the U.N. forces shooting, you know, our people there in Haiti. And people also the IMF and the World Bank plan of African resources. Just from the last conference, I was in the African Socialist International Conference in Sierra Leone in October, where one of the participants there said that just in 2005 alone, $20 billion of dollars was paid by Africa to Europe and America, and I think any president, any black president basically, should oppose that and ask for that money to be returned. And we assume every year similar amounts of money leave Africa to come to North America and Europe. And I think it should take a stand on that. And another problem is we have all these immigration laws. Just imagine the number of Africans dying, trying to cross Haiti to come to America, are being locked down. I know now Africans are locked up in Guantanamo, and they've been there longer than the forces that have been locked down in the so-called war against terror. Africans, they found Africans from Haiti there, and they're still there. And the issue is immediately free those Africans and let them go in the country they wish to go to, and remove all these visa fees. Why we have to pay something like $200 to $400 just to apply for a visa to come to the U.S.? And I don't feel Africans should apply for pay any fees for any visa when you think all the resources they're stealing from us. And it should remove all this. And finally, it definitely must end all kind of censorship the U.S. government is involved in against African people. Be in terms of AIDS or Ebola and other kind of programs we never heard of, which probably Obama will be informed about. He should take a stand against all this.
Cherno, do you have anything to add?
Yes, Uhuru. To add to that, I think, you know, one of the things that we should expect Obama to do, which I doubt he is going to do, is to call for the multinational corporations who are involved in the theft of resources here, these operations, and also pay reparations for the amount of diamonds and other resources that they've been looting. We have two leading North American corporations that are involved in the loot of aluminum resources in Guinea-Conakry. In Liberia, there is Firestone Rubber Company, and the Liberian American Mining Company, which is involved in the theft of the iron ore in Liberia. And we know that it was part of the U.S. strategy to control the resources in West Africa that resulted in the crisis that has claimed the lives of millions of Africans in this part of Africa, which is also responsible for the current conditions that we face here. And we think that if Obama is serious and represents any form of aspiration for African people, he should be able to speak out on this question and as well as struggle to overturn this relationship. I think that we have a responsibility as Africans to push forward the implementation of some of these resolutions that we came up with during the ASI conference here in Freetown in October. And we think that part of the process is that the multinational corporations, the Foreign Military Intelligence, the U.S. FBI in Freetown, and the multinational corporations ACOA and ACTAN they should pay reparations to the Africans in West Africa and other parts of the world that are involved in the theft of these resources. These are issues that I think needs to be put forward, and I don't think that Obama represents any form of aspiration on our part to reclaim our right to have control of these resources, because he is put there to maintain the relationship responsible for the operation of these corporations, and whose activities have resulted in the administration of our people, the poverty, and the hardship that we face, not only in West Africa, but throughout Africa. So I think that if Obama is genuine, this should be the issue that he should address. And failing to address that, we will equally know that he doesn't represent our interest, and we still believe that he doesn't represent our interest.
I'm going to allow for some more questions from the studio audience. Just a moment. I just want to throw something into the mix, because I was reading a statement, a open letter that was written to Obama by author Alice Walker, who I believe wrote Color Purple, wasn't it? Color Purple and several other things. She stated in the open letter to Obama, she said, "I would advise you to remember that you did not create the disaster that the world is experiencing. And you alone are not responsible for bringing the world back to balance. A primary responsibility that you do have, however, is to cultivate happiness in your own life." I just want to throw that in the mix, you know, and see, you know, what the response is from folks around that. Because I know I particularly found it appalling. But would anybody like to comment on that?
I cannot imagine Alice Walker or anybody else advising Bush or Clinton or any white president that don't worry about any of the disaster in the world, just be happy. That's the most extraordinarily obtuse statement. I can't even believe that selloutism goes to that depth. I mean, it's an incredible statement. But that's the thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's a certain kind of mental retardation that's informed by class interests, by somebody who does not have to suffer the consequences of being black in America. It's easy for them to say that, or by somebody who thinks that his election somehow means that now that he's there, I can get a piece of the action as well, notwithstanding what America's doing to African people here and throughout the world. That's what I mean when I'm talking about these ersatz leftists, you know, like Baraka and the rest of them, who can find this discern in his message something that nobody else can see. None of the white people can see. None of the billionaires who've given him money can see. But they see some potential revolutionary stream running through that, and condemns anybody who opposes that. Because somehow he represents ability for some kind of unity between the left and the near left, whatever the hell either of those are in America and in the world today, yes. You know, it's extraordinary, and it's manufactured. It's an absolute extraordinary kind of mental gymnastics that's necessary for people who are bankrupt in terms of ideas and yes. And ability to unite with the aspirations of the impoverished and struggling peoples, African people here and around the world, and other oppressed peoples as well. He didn't create it. So therefore, what he should do is be happy.
You know, one of the things Alice Walker seems to be expressing is this attitude among many of our people of protection of Obama. She seems to be saying, don't let them worry your last nerves, child. Just take care of your own mental health and everything will be all right. You know, we need you to be mentally healthy while you're up there protecting us. She needs to be talking to us about how we protect ourselves from him.
Yeah.
He's the one with the power. He's the one with the armies. He's the one who's allied himself with. Very quite voluntarily with the most powerful folk in the world. He doesn't need Alice Walker as a psychoanalyst to keep him from going crazy. We need leadership to keep us from going under him.
Yeah. You were gonna say something, Eddie?
Oh, no.
What I want to do is open it up again to the studio audience that we have here, and for those of you who are out there listening, to do so again, you can call in or email. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. You can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629. That's country code 44. Call us through Skype. Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com.
I wanted to just say something about this old guard thing that's being talked about. Because some of the pundits declaring opposition by activists to Obama as being representative of some old guard, some dinosaur period, where somehow we've been left behind in history, but this new political era, in some places they've even characterized as the end of politics, of black politics, or something to that effect. And they use as examples of this old guard, most commonly, people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. Of course, they don't use Amiri Baraka, who, you know, was probably older than both of the people I just mentioned in terms of being old guard. But they use these as examples because there is in fact, an obvious kind, and has been an obvious kind of competition that's experienced between these forces. And the reason I say they're competing is because neither of them is opposed to imperialism or U.S. imperialism. All of them have been involved in struggles, sometimes against particular policies of imperialism. But clearly what each of them, Sharpton and Jackson, at different times have run for, have campaigned for, and they're not the only ones, as president of black America, as president of the black people. And so Obama's running and becoming president and struggling and successfully can be seen as a serious blow and overshadow. In fact, I think it does really undermine their significance, because if your only task is to become the president of the black people or the leader of the black people in that context, then you've had it. But we have never run to be the president of the black people under American imperialism. Our complaint and our criticism has been of American imperialism and imperialism in general. It is within this context that we criticize Obama, not because he is Obama, but because he is an instrument of the continuing oppression of the peoples of the world. And so we're not contending with him to get the nod from white power, as some of the other people who they have used as examples. And so in that, we've never been a part of the old guard, which is a kind of loyal opposition. Our opposition is to the whole rotten social system that is incapable of solving the problems of the oppressed peoples of the world. In fact, is primarily responsible for all the problems that the peoples have. So I think that whole question of the old guard stuff, you know, needs to be laid to rest, because there, it is true that there have been people who've in contention with each other for the nod, to get the franchise, if you will, from imperialism as the leader of the black people. Our objective is to get imperialism off the face of the earth, to get it out of the picture, to make it possible so human beings can live again and not to have to worry about, is this president, whether it's Obama or Bush or somebody else, going to get rid of an AFRICOM that shouldn't exist in the first place? Whether they're going to stop the torture centers that they've got in Guantanamo and those they've established in this country and other places with the extraordinary renditions, which, by the way, was created by Clinton. Not Bush, whether or not they could come up with these predatory schemes, lending schemes that they call now subprime mortgages that was targeted African people and Latinos for the exact purpose of stealing all their resources. I mean, the thing is imperialism and not a particular policy of imperialism, not just because it treats black people bad. And yes, I came to recognition of what imperialism was because of how it impacted on my life and my neighbors and my brothers and sisters and family, what it did to black people. That was the starting point of my investigation. But having gone beyond that starting point, I see that we're dealing with a foul social system that oppresses the vast majority of the people on earth. Yes. Most people on earth do not have access to clean water. Most people on earth go to bed hungry every night, and all of this is true because of the United States government and U.S. imperialism and Western imperialism in general. That's what I'm opposed to. And any sucker, a Barack Obama, whether white, black, female, male, homosexual, heterosexual, I don't give a damn,
any force that supports that process and that rescues it at a time of serious crisis is something that we have to oppose, and that's the context within which I oppose Obama. I'm not looking to be a part of a system that stole half of Mexico.
Yes.
That they now, you know, Texas, California, Utah, you know, you name it, that's responsible for the impoverishment of all these people, create an artificial border, say they can't come across, and now characterize them as illegal aliens and justify their poverty and starvation. I don't want to be a part of that system. I don't want to be. You can have your America, black or however you want to call it, if that's the kind of system it's going to be. If it's going to be one that continues to keep our brothers and sisters in Haiti eating mud instead of food, when Haiti fed this country and France, you know, for more than 100 years, black people did. You know, and when it says that a black person can't come to America except as a slave, they've set up these processes so that you can't even come, you know, you, in terms of getting and the ability to come here from Africa or some other place, you can't do it. You got to be a slave to come here if you black person. No, I don't. That's not something I want to be a part of. And I don't give a damn if a Negro presides over the process or if it's a white person, or it's a male or a female.
Yeah. I want to open it up again for those of our listeners and those of in our studio audience to ask questions.
I just want to really express appreciation for the comrades that have joined us, Comrade Luwazi and Cherno and Chairman and Penny Hess. This is a really exciting process. Is that good? What?
Yeah, that's good. That's
yeah.
But anyway, I just had a couple of questions, just two questions. But I wanted to start by saying the whole discussion that you have in general with people who supported or did support or support Barack Obama is very, very similar to having a discussion with a really devout Christian. It's like you run in circles because you are looking at the objective world and they have a scripture as an answer for everything that you pose as a legitimate, you know, as a legitimate objective observation that you've made about whatever the circumstance is. It's like people chronically feel the need to be apologists or to defend Barack despite all of his policies, despite his history. So it's just really fascinating. And that question I'm asking leading up to, what does this probably for the chairman, what does Barack Obama's candidacy mean for the movement in general, the movement's ability to organize the masses of people? This whole concept of hope and change that has hoodwinked a great majority of African people in this country who would have otherwise come to, you know, very real and different conclusions about how to solve their problems. What does it mean in the immediate for our ability to organize African people? And the other thing I wanted to question the chairman to comment on is I just read an article today that was saying that one of the first things that Barack Obama did was come out and assault the question of nation, which is a really key point to the politics of the party and the Uhuru movement and the African internationalist and liberation movement in general. The question of African people being a nation held captive inside of America as opposed to these, you know, new specimens that are called African Americans, Afro-Haitians or whatever. He said something to the effect they were saying something to the effect of it. Obama represents the ability for black, something similar to what the chairman was saying earlier. Barack Obama represents the need now for African people to see themselves as American, not black Americans or African Americans.
Well, first of all, this whole question, what does it mean practically? And that's an important question we're confronted with. Because Obama has been elected. And not only has he been elected, but millions of African people here and around the world assume that this election means change. It means power. For example, I mentioned to you, one brother said to me, now that we got the power, the question is what we do with it. Somebody forwarded me a text message that said says that all white people should report to the cotton fields at 7 a.m. in the morning for orientation. You understand? So, and then I've heard other people comment on saying things like, we got the power now. This is just, you know, the expression coming from African people. So I think that what we have to do, I think that in terms of our movement and struggle, particularly on the U.S. front, I think it would look slightly different in places like Sierra Leone, but not fundamentally different, but slightly different, is that here on this front, I think what we have to do is move off the assumption that the Africans are moving off, that we got the power. And that I think that we should now begin to exercise, you know, really initiate deepened struggles in the various places where we are located, come out with our campaigns and programs much more effectively, and then even use slogans that says things like, we got the power now, or now it's our turn, or et cetera, that's moving off the assumption that the African masses are moving off, the headedness that people are working with and the assumption that we have the power. For example, right now, we're involved in St. Petersburg with this case of this murder of Javon Dawson, 17-year-old shot twice in the back by the St. Petersburg Police Department. Just the other day, the St. Petersburg Police Department said that it was all right for them to shoot him in the back twice, even though, you know, he was, you know, without, he was unarmed, et cetera, et cetera. I think that we should go to the mayor's church and have a demonstration at his church, and I think we should pass out a flyer that says that that here, you know, in this new era, this new day of hope and change, you know, we have a situation, because there are also white folk playing this game too of assuming that there is this hope. But this is responding in part to something else that you raised, is that because the white people unite with Obama's definition of black people. Yeah. They don't unite with Africans and our real struggles and real causes. They're uniting with his definition of that and his definition of change. So we take it to his church and we pass out a flyer in this era of change and hope, etc. You got this man who sits up in church with you on a regular basis pretending to be like some kind of God-fearing, etc., while he is presiding over a situation that's murdering young African people, and then demand that he give reparations to African people for the murders. He should go to his house in the swank neighborhoods that he lived with the other white people and have loud, noisy demonstrations and pass out flyers to the other white people that are saying, too, that this is a call, you know, the hope and change, a new era, et cetera. Get on board and get this white man here who's responsible for all of this to get on board. I think that we should go out with the African masses assuming that they ready to take the power. So we going to help them to take the power. That's what we should be. I think that should be our primary thing. Now, that's not to say that we don't criticize Obama, but the criticism of Obama becomes secondary to riding the wave of hope and expectations of the assumption of power that's among the masses of African people. Because you don't have to worry, because Obama going to say, wait a minute. You know how he stuttered and said, wait a minute now. Where at the, when we challenged him right here in St. Petersburg with that event, he's going to stutter and step out and say, wait a minute, right? That's not what I'm talking about. And the more we can push him and go places that we know he is unwilling to go, the more we will force him also to expose himself to the masses of African people here. Yeah. So I think that's what it should mean to our movement and how we should take it on. In terms of the question of nationality, and he's already working real hard on that. He's already been doing that. That's where he became a mutt, you know. And, you know, I think, you know, I want to get a sense. I ain't no damn mutt, you understand? I do believe that he is trying to undermine this question. And the one way we keep that from happening is by holding up Africa. I think that because to become American demands that we have to relinquish our connection with our mother country, and that hasn't been required of anybody else. And I think we have to hold up Africa and what U.S. and imperialism is doing to Africa and our brothers and our sisters there, and especially right across the pond in Haiti, you know, where there's a fundamental kind of crisis that we're confronted with. So I think those are some of the things that we have to do. And there may be others who...
No. Go ahead. We got another question in the studio.
Yeah, I had a comment and a question. The comment was to go back to things that Obama can do. We also, as NPDOM, have the Revolutionary National Democratic Program, in which Obama can unite with and push as a representation of his unity with moving poor people and African people's agenda forward. The question is also is real revealing that you see all these so-called leaders coming out and talking about basically relinquishing Obama of any responsibility to African people and poor people in general. And it really shows that how deep the level of neocolonialism runs to people that were considered to be in leadership, like Alice Walker, Amira Baraka, and several other people. But I appreciate this discussion, one, because it begins to put him in a level where he has to be accountable to the people. And it's interesting how you will find us a lot of times, and people like that would say that he's not accountable to anything to our community, the African community, and that we don't even have the right to ask questions about what about the black community, even though he can go to Miami and talk about the Jews and what he's going to do for the Jews. He can go to every other community and talk about what he has. But I wanted to just say that I think that this shows the impact that that neocolonialism has on the African community as we begin to move forward, is that it takes away any responsibility and began to remove power from people to say that we can no longer fight for our self-determination, but we have to be able to just let him come in and do whatever he wants to continue the counterinsurgents, to continue to attack our community, continue to do the same thing that Bush did, that Clinton did, that other administration and imperialism does in general. But we just say that it's okay since he's black. It's okay since it's Obama, and it removes people from being able to act and respond. So the question is how do we help people to understand that we have to hold him accountable in the same way that every other community hold presidents accountable to do for their community, and not just say because he's a black president that that's enough for him to be in there, and we shouldn't say anything because we don't have the right to be self-determined and to meet our own needs. How do we help people to understand that we have to hold him accountable and in order to continue our struggle for self-determination?
Would anybody like to respond to that? I know we should have a pretty interesting... I'd like to see actually what Cherno's view is on that, as somebody who's out in Africa where the U.S. is involved in some serious kind of assault.
But not just that, because the thing is that one thing that's being overlooked is that there are 50-some-odd so-called black presidents in Africa. there's a one, you know, they've had several in Haiti. You know, so the question is not good enough. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I think it's important. And also we need to mention that Luezi, though living in London, is an exile from Congo. You know, where there was a black president that's responsible for him right now being in London. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, this is Glenn Ford. I think what the chairman was describing was essentially earlier was essentially calling Obama's bluff, and in the process defining him. For example, before the Civil War, there were two camps among abolitionists. One camp accepted that the U.S. Constitution was, in fact, a racist pro-slavery document, and that the framers of that Constitution were racist slavers and intended everything that they wrote down. That is, they intended it to be a racist pro-slavery document. There was another camp that said, yeah, we know that they were racist and pro-slavery, of course, but let's pretend that the Constitution actually is a freedom document, that it is an anti-slavery document, and and that we will do this this tactically and make people be, give a public perception of that Constitution as being what we said it was. And that's the faction that, that won out in that pre-Civil War abolition movement. By challenging an Obama to be what people think that he is, understanding that black folks were not really listening to his positions on the issues. They didn't want to hear what his positions were on any issue.
Right.
The only issue was, is Obama going to be elected or not? But by engaging him on issues, we in fact will be making Obama define himself. We understand that when we organize, we will be expressing what the people actually want programmatically. But we must remain in motion so that when Obama resists that and opposes it, then for the first time, people will understand that Obama is not on their side.
Right on.
We're not in the campaign anymore.
Right on.
That is in this presidential reality. We have to show by picking our issues carefully and organizing effectively that Obama is not who they thought he was.
Yes.
But we can only do that by agitation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Splendid.
If I add to that thing, the question is not about forcing Obama to accept our own position, because we know that he doesn't represent our own interests. Like the chairman said, we have over 50 black presidents in Africa, and our conditions have grown worse, they continue to grow worse every day. And we are living in a situation where we've seen not one president, but several African presidents. We have witnessed the same aspiration, the same excitement on the part of Africans during the period leading to a so-called transition to independence that we refer to as neocolonialism. I think our struggle should be one that will expose the strategy that has been used by the imperialists to impose a neocolonial puppet at the national level, and you know how that will affect our struggle for self-determination at a global level. And I think that we should be able to equally point out the relationship between the neocolonial puppets that we have in Africa and Barack Obama himself. So I think that, you know, like Glenn Ford said, this could be done through effective organizing, mass mobilization, and our ability to point out, because the fact that Obama could not say anything about the African community during the campaign is an indication that it does not represent our interest, and that the fact that he was supported by the capitalists on, you know, from Wall Street is an indication that he represents imperialist interest, and that is part of the process that's been set in motion to rescue the capitalist economy from its current crisis. So we should be able to put out that line effectively and equally expose Obama and expose the strategy of the imperialists to use our own, you know, people who look like us against our own interest. I think that should be our focus. That's what we think should be the focus of our work. But I don't think that Obama can unite with our own position, and pressing upon him demands, you know, we are not going to expect anything to come from Obama. We have to be able to educate the masses that, you know, what has just happened in the U.S. is against our own interests and against our own struggle for self-determination and the ability to control our own resources. And we should not support Obama just because he's black. Just like in Africa, people support somebody because they come from the same tribe. So I think these are issues that we should be able to organize around and educate the masses, and it can be effective through mass mobilization and political education, effective political education among the people as well.
Yeah. Can I just add this one to all the good things, all the panelists have been saying? A lot of people we talk to, they saying when they support Obama, he shows at least that's what we can achieve. They mean as an individual. At least we can achieve that. And this achievement as an individual, I'm really tired of hearing that. because that's something they imperialism only create for us, that they can all the time hold up this single black individual doing this, achieving that. But it's the collective, it's the nation, basically,
yes,
that has to achieve, no one individual. And there is an enormous amount of work to be done, because the people need to be able to define change for us, for the people. What does change mean for the people? And out of that, the people just repeating what they hear. They're not starting from their own conditions, but they're starting from the assumptions the imperialism has fed to them, you know, that this is a crisis, we need somebody to do this and that. But a change has to address the condition of the people, and is the level of propaganda we can do to get the people understand that, the people, get the people mobilized, as Chen has been saying, and organized around our own program. And if we are not successful in anything like that, then we're going to continue to have this situation we have now, when one individual can become the base representative of imperialism, or the most fighter for for imperialism, seen as a change. Looking things like from someone who lives in Africa, people in Africa, they still see America in the eyes of imperialism. You know, they don't see, people are not fully aware of the conditions for the Africans in the U.S. They only judge U.S. by what they see, you know, Oprah Winfrey, Michael Jackson, stuff like that. And as far as they're concerned, is this individual achievement is definitely what matters to them, because that's the only thing they see. The images of the struggles, of the condition of the people on the ground in the U.S., you know, those images do not get to the people on the ground. And that's why, the significance of the ASI. What I'm trying to say basically is that we have to get our own propaganda to be effective, to be everywhere our people are, and begin to challenge all the bourgeois ideas that is in our people's head, so we can begin to see the world, you know, from the point of view of the African slave, see the world as it really is, so we can see the class question, what, you know, Colin Powell is, what Obama is, what Mandela is. You know, that's really things that we need to do. We need to win on people to begin to see the world in that fashion.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com. This is a sum up of the recent election of Barack Obama. We have on our panel speaking today Glenn Ford, the editor of BlackAgendaReport.com. Omalia Shetela, chairman of the African People's Socialist Party and African Socialist International. Penny Hess, the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. Louise Kinshasa, who is the secretary general of the African Socialist International. And Cherno Alpha Mba, the director of organization of the African Socialist International. Our guests span from throughout the U.S. To Europe, to Africa. I want to open it up for more questions and comments. We have one in the studio. Go ahead, brother.
Well, once again, it's more of a statement, and I keep hearing the word change a lot, you know, and myself personally, I feel like the word change is kind of an individual thing, because what I define as change is not going to be what you define as change, what anybody else defines as change. So what I'm basically leading into is me, myself personally, like I said before, I have a lot of different experiences. I can probably say with all confidence, I probably experienced more racism than 95% of the people that's going to call in and that's probably sitting in this room, except for maybe you. Because you got a couple of years on me, so you got it. But, you know, just in my little 29 years of life. So when I see Barack Obama being president, I don't just see a person in a position, and I see actual change, because he didn't just get there with just black votes. And I do understand that there are some things behind closed doors. People may have had some other agendas or why they did vote for Barack Obama. But the thing about that is, though, you may have meant bad intent for your agenda,
But when it all comes about, it's going to be something good that comes out of that. Because what myself personally, I use me for an example. What I use him as is not a savior, because, you know, yes, I am a very religious person. I don't see him as Jesus Christ coming to save my soul and save my family. What I see him as is kind of like a guiding light. So you see that image down there at the end of that light, and that lets you know that it might be dark in this tunnel, but eventually, if I keep going in a certain direction, there's light somewhere out there. Now, it might not be the same light that, you know, that you might see or I might see, but there's some light out there that's going to dictate and that's going to guide you to a certain point. That's it.
Okay. You see, the issue there, Mafrika, is that you can't reduce it, try as you may. You can't reduce it to an individual question. You see, because if it were just you who was suffering from a problem, then you can say it's an individual thing. But if everybody like you has the same set of problems that you have, it's not an individual problem, it's a social contradiction. That's the thing that I'm saying. So we have to ask him, just like the Jews. Jews didn't say, Mr. Obama, I know that everybody got an idea about this or that, you know, but I have my own idea. And they say, no, what you going to do about Israel? What you going to do about Israel? When he went down there, those lying, dirty, gusano, sellout Cubans who betrayed their whole people, who were overthrown from, you know, the situation where they could dominate and sell Cuba out to as a real house of prostitution and gambling for U.S. imperialism. He went down there and promised them that he was going to continue to oppress and maintain the oppression exploitation of Cuba. And but you, what you're seeing, the Africans, and this is an exact perfect example of what was mentioned earlier, that the defense of Obama goes to extraordinary lengths. Because the question is, he doesn't even have to say he's going to do anything for our group. My child doesn't have to have a future, or children like mine, my cousins, my neighbors, the people who look and come from the same historical experience. You see, every other group, they didn't approach him and say, okay, I got an individual thing that I'm just glad you're there because I can see a light at the, what light? It might be the house is on fire. They didn't speak to that. They say, what are you going to do for folk and groups just like my group? And I think that's where we have to be. And I think it's a betrayal on your part to say that you're just interested in what, how it affects your thing on the individual thing.
No.
You see, you have to hold up the mantle for the whole group. And that's what we have to require of Mr. Obama as well.
Well, actually, that's kind of what I was really call myself leading into, because that's really what I feel like, in essence, that he's doing. I mean, you holding up a flag. I mean, you saying, okay, here I am, here it is, this is what you can do, you know, even though there are obstacles out there.
But what is he saying you can do?
You can do anything. It's right there for you.
Well, that's what he's saying.
Well, but the thing about that, and the thing about that, once again, it all falls in, because once again, like I said, you yourself already expressed that you don't feel like that you can, you know, that you can, that you're not, you don't like the system and how it's set up, and you don't feel like that we can get where we want to in this system.
No, comrade, I can do anything as an individual. I've known that for a long time.
No, I mean, as far as accomplishing what we need as a people,
no,
inside
as a people,
this system.
You can. Because
yeah,
of,
that's
you,
what I'm saying.
As a people, and we haven't done it as a people. But see, America will allow any of us to survive, to succeed as an individual, depending on what we are willing to do, and especially if we're willing to do it at the expense of the rest of us. It's the group that America will not allow to succeed. So an individual says, see, I made it. See, is that makes America wonderful. That's nonsense. Mm-hmm. The thing is, what can you say about the group? And Obama has refused to say anything positive about the group. In fact, he has done things to undermine the group to the extent now he's saying the group like a mutt, you know, and that's the issue. The issue is that he cannot speak and will not speak to the interests of the group of us. He speaks to others as groups. He speaks to other group interests, but not yours and not mine. That's the contradiction. And you have to demand more than that. And you have to be beyond this point where you say, well, I just kind of believe it. I just kind of know it. I just kind of think it. Nobody else who's saying, okay, I just kind of think he's going to do that. They say, you know, let me see your program. Let me hear it. And sometimes even that's not good enough. Except Africans, we just kind of hope it. We just kind of think it. We just kind of know it. We don't see it, but et cetera, et cetera.
It is
Is there anybody else who would like to respond before we move? We've got some folks on the line.
Yeah, I just want to say we had a meeting, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, and a student came, three student, African students from the U.S. came to the meeting, and therefore that meeting was a meeting in support of Obama.
Yeah.
So they were shocked when they realized we didn't support Obama, and they said they haven't met anyone who doesn't support Obama. And I asked them, but what Obama is going to do for our people? And they said it doesn't have to do anything for us. And first, it will do nothing in the first 4 years of his presidency. And I said, this is incredible, because just go on any website, you will see the amount of money white people are saying that must be pumped in the system to keep the U.S. economy at float, which means that basically white businesses and communities have to be given a lot of money. And how can you come up and say it can't do nothing? Because it can't say that to white people, that I will do nothing to you in the first 4 years. And I just don't, you know, this really is a problem. Even here or in England, the amount of people coming in support of Obama, you know, just is incredible. And when Obama is saying nothing about our people, it's just unbelievable, you know. And yeah, that's incredible.
Before we close, Comrade, I hope we do give a bit of time. I know Penn has done some research, and perhaps Glenn has too, in terms of the forces who are lined up with Obama, people who he's looking at in terms of coming into his cabinet, people he's already chosen. For example, we know he's chosen Rahm Emanuel, and he's got a history, and people need to know something about who we're dealing with. And so it's not just a, you know, just some kind of abstract discussion. But there is a reality of histories that we're looking at as well.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. We're definitely going to give some time for that. We have another caller who is on the air. Who are calling?
Uhuru, I really appreciate this conversation, this discussion, and I think my comment and question is pertinent to both the discussion that was happening and also what the chairman was just saying, because I just wanted to, well, the whole discussion of how so many people that I talk to, they project what they are hoping for and assuming that Obama will bring it. And I understand that in his autobiography, Audacity of Hope, he had made some statement to the effect that he, being new on the national political scene, he offers himself up as a blank slate where various sectors of the population can project their hopes and dreams. And I just, it's mind-blowing to me that people can assume that he's anti-war and that he's going to uplift the black community and he's going to make all this positive change when there's nothing that he said, when he's, everything that he said is really the opposite. And I was just wondering if, I know Glenn Ford's been writing almost weekly about Obama and might have more details on this, and also what you had mentioned in terms of what he's done since being elected. But I was wondering if you could provide some more statistics, if any of the panelists had comments on more, I mean, not statistics, but details and specifics about what he has promised and what we can anticipate with the Obama presidency.
Would anybody like to take that on?
I think Glenn has done the comrade. Brother Glenn Ford has done an incredible amount of research, and you know, can you lead us here?
He hasn't promised us very much at all. He's Obama is a master of rhetoric, but in terms of detailed promises, he does not define himself very well. What occurs here, because the U.S. corporate media is both lazy and also on his side, and has been on the side for a very long time, is that people fill in the blanks. What will he do about the housing crisis, which affects black people far more than any other group? His housing policy is described as calling for a 3-month moratorium on foreclosures. It does not appear to actually be that. What it does is it encourages lenders, banks, to come to an agreement with the lendee during this 3-month period. That is, for 3 months rather than foreclose, try to come to an agreement. But it doesn't spell out the terms of that agreement. And if the lendee is not willing to come to terms, if he is intransigent in terms of foreclosing, well, there's nothing that Obama's policy does about that. So, in fact, it is a voluntary policy with no teeth. But you wouldn't know that from reading the corporate media. So what do we do? How do we? Well, we pretend, I believe, I think we pretend that Obama, in good faith, doesn't want people to be thrown out at least for 3 months from their home, and pretend that that really is his policy, and organize demonstrations calling upon Obama to fulfill his promise that he never made, and then allow him to show through his actions when he or his spokespersons denounce those who are calling for him to fulfill the promise that he never made. Yeah. Well, let them define the fact that he never made that promise.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I just use that as an example, because we'll find that in various areas of struggle that Obama has been successful in drawing the fuzziest, murkiest of lines in terms of what his promise really is. And so part of the job is to define, to have him define finally what it was that he seemed as if he was promising or not. And you do that by confronting the issue.
Yes. I think also that Obama has made specific statements about in opposition to reparations for African people. That was the fastest growing demand. That was the one that went to Durban, South Africa, in the United Nations sponsored conference that had the United Nations declare that slavery and colonialism was a crime against humanity, and that reparations was in order. He has attacked African fathers. He attacked his preacher for 20 years. He attacked Farrakhan. I mean, these are explicit statements. These were not fuzzy statements here.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to be fuzzy with Reverend Wright, you know, and in so doing. The main thing is, I'm not a Farrakhan supporter or anything like that, but the main thing is that what he did in so doing was to define a political stance. He created a political stance and develop an idea about what it is that he stands for the benefit of white people. Because even as he was attacking them, Farrakhan comes out and said, let him attack me, it's all right. And people saying, Africans blame Reverend Wright for telling the truth about America. And which is a very, very, that's a serious problem, because Obama functions as a force to cover up the history of crimes and current crimes that America perpetrates against Africans and other peoples around the world. So I think that those are some explicit statements, an explicit stance that Obama, those are not fuzzy. Those are not the blank slate statements there. I mean, blank state slate. Those are definite statements he's made in reference to African people. I just want to say that one of the things I found really interesting is Amiri Baraka, in defense of Obama, around he had to take on this thing that Obama said about African fathers, and he went so far as to say that a black man killed his sister, so therefore somehow it validated what Obama has to say, which is, I found quite extraordinary, coming from somebody who's politically as astute Amiri Baraka is known to be. Yeah. Eddie was going to say something. Yeah.
Just going back to the couple of comments you made. First, one thing is as far as the Reverend Wright thing. This is just my personal opinion, but I really felt like he really showed that he wasn't, you know, in support of what was going on with the black community just by how he came out. Because the way I took it was more of an individual thing. Okay, this is my turn to get Reverend Wright's message out to a mass. You know, so I really felt like it was very selfish of him to come out at that time, even though I can agree with you. And what he said was true. You know, to a point, it was true, and it is true to this day. But I felt like it was more. I felt like it was personally motivated rather than I'm trying to help the masses. I'm trying to get Reverend Wright on. That's why Reverend Wright is out now trying to get his book on. And as far as that Black Father thing, me and myself personally, if it ain't true, you shouldn't worry about it. But if it's true, you should take it personal. So if you ain't taking care of your kids, then you should take that comment personal. But if you're taking care of your kids, you really shouldn't worry about it. Just like what he said about gay marriage. And this is the way I feel. No, I don't agree with gay marriage. No, I don't think it's right. But yet and still, though, if they do get their rights, it's not going to take away from mine. You're not going to bring that gayness in my house. My relationship and me and my girl strong enough to overcome that. I'm not worried about what you're doing. It's not going to affect what's going on in my house. So with all that being said, that's it.
Appreciate it.
Go ahead, Glenn.
What Barack Obama has been expert at is creating impressions. And so when he takes certain positions that are not related to anything legislative, and I want to make that clear, but when he takes certain positions denouncing Reverend Wright, distancing himself from all kinds of black folks, when he is then creating an impression among the targeted group, and that is white folks, that he has as much disdain for these folks as they do, and therefore he is closer to them, and he is a safe bet. But there are programmatic positions in which he can be confronted almost obliquely, where the position that he seems to be taking for the public perception, for example, again, in the foreclosure business, is not his actual position. And so, these are positions that are unlike how you feel about Reverend Wright. Mm-hmm. These are subject to legislation. Mm-hmm. And so it is worthwhile, especially in those areas in which he is fuzzy, or the public perception of his position is fuzzy, to call the bluff, to force the hand, to see if by committing our forces around a specific incident in which people are being foreclosed and put out of their houses, to have the Obama define himself. Is he really going to defend people from being put out, or is that just a fuzzy statement which really, in the end, does not defend anybody?
Mm. I want to move, because we have just about a little more than 10 minutes left, and there's some things that I really want us to speak to. Particularly, you know, the fact that Obama's begun naming his cabinet. And despite his mantra of change, as it's been said before, it looks like he's picking the usual suspects. And I want to open it up for Comrade Penny Hess to speak to who some of these forces are, including Rahm Emanuel and others who we're looking at, because I think it's important for us to see who these people are that would be part of the Obama government.
Well, I really appreciate this discussion today. It's been really profound and very informative. Just to talk about, first of all, Rahm Emanuel, who was named chief of staff, and that is one of the positions that Obama has actually named. Other people he hasn't yet, but there's a group of people that, you know, there's a lot of speculation about. But Rahm Emanuel is considered, he's a representative, a Democrat representative from Chicago, from Illinois. And he's been very close with Obama for a long time. he is an investment banker, Emmanuel, and he is literally a Zionist. And by that, I mean his father was actually part of the army that the occupying army that took over Palestine, the land of Palestine, in the 40s. And I think that Emmanuel was born in Israel or grew up there early on. And, he's extremely right-wing. He's considered the right wing of the Democratic Party. I think he was part of that Democratic Leadership Conference. And he's a person under Clinton. He played a really important role in the passage of NAFTA, which is the free trade policy that basically takes off all controls over on what corporations and the capitalist powers can do to people around the world. And NAFTA was specifically, towards Mexico and the Americas and stuff, and has created conditions for the outsourcing where corporations send jobs and capital outside the United States because people can then work for for 50 cents a day and no health insurance and, those kind of conditions, and under terrible environmentally toxic conditions are allowed to happen. So these are some of the things that Emmanuel represents. And he's called Rambo. They called him Rambo because he was, he would do things like send dead fish to the enemies, of political enemies that he had. And this guy's, he's kind of crazy as well. He's really, he's pretty scary.
But I think you should also say something about, his involvement, in housing scandals, money scandals himself. We're looking at the question of what is...
Say more on that, because I don't have a lot
of... he's been, in fact, there has been some scandal about monies around housing. I thought you might have had detail on that. Housing scandals that he was involved in. As was another woman. I can't remember her name. She is...
Penny Pritzker.
And I'm not talking about Pritzker. I'm talking about the woman who is...
Valerie Jarrett,
who is a relative of Vernon Jordan, who was the guy who took the messages between Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. She has also been involved in some housing schemes and what have you that have been... They're talking about her being the... possibly an advisor to the president, et cetera.
Oh, that's right. Wasn't Rahm Emanuel on the board of Fannie Mae when this was happening?
That's right.
And Jarrett also benefited from that kind of HUD, Fannie Mae, different kinds of relationships on the subprime mortgage industry, which targeted the African community in particular. Well, also, just to go through really quickly, his economic team, which is... really important because, as Mr. Ford pointed out, Obama made the bailout happen. There were people, there were congressmen who said, and senators who said that they would have supported what their constituency was calling for, which was to vote against the bailout, but Obama really pressured them to vote for it, and they did. And to just make it clear that bailout gave $700 to $850 billion, and that's just the start, to the bankers. Mm-hmm. It will not do anything whatsoever to alleviate the economic crisis that is existing for most of the people, and especially for the African community in this country. And of course, as Mr. Ford pointed out, it doesn't do anything to alleviate the enormous loss of homes and wealth in the form of equity that the African community has lost, which I think is in the hundreds of billions of dollars as a community because of the subprime and foreclosures. The people that he is putting on his economic team, therefore, is very significant. And the key person considered to be the next Secretary of the Treasury is Lawrence Summers. And this guy, who was an undersecretary of the Treasury under Robert Rubin, who was the Secretary of the Treasury of Clinton, and then Summers became the Secretary of the Treasury, I think, for the last year and a half under Clinton, is so reactionary that he was the president of Harvard University. And he was so anti-African and so anti-woman that the faculty and staff of especially the humanities department forced him to resign. So this guy is being taken on by Obama, who was too reactionary for Harvard, one of the most reactionary places you can imagine, and he's going to be in the key, one of the key roles that determines who's going to have wealth and who's going to be in deep poverty in this country. And, you know, he, Summers was also once the, played a key role in the World Bank, and at that time a secret memo that he wrote was leaked to the press, and in this memo he wrote something like, it is in the interest of industrialized nations, U.S. and Europe, etc., to do all their toxic waste dumping in places like Africa and impoverished, formerly colonized nations, because basically he said the value of life there is worthless. So this is the person who could be, and also Paul Volcker could be the Secretary of the Treasury, and as Mr. Ford pointed out, it also could be Paulson, who's there now. He has indicated that he might be doing that, or Robert Rubin. And all of these people are clearly, they are bankers. They are there to keep the power and the wealth of the banking class intact. That's all they're about, and that requires getting rid of enormous social programs that Clinton himself did. He ended, quote, welfare as we know it, and he was instrumental in laying the groundwork for everything that happened in the Bush 2 administration. Also, the Secretary of the Defense, well, I mean, he's saying he's going to keep Robert Gates, who is the Secretary of the Defense now under Bush. And this guy, he's a CIA, he was involved in Iran-Contra, he had a big part in that, he was investigated at that time. He was asked to head Homeland Security under Bush Jr., but he refused, or he turned that down. But, I mean, you know, this guy is scary, he's about carrying out, and he's also, interesting, close to Brzezinski, who is one of the main advisors of Obama, and who himself is a warmonger. And I think it's interesting that Obama has said for a long time that he would be about attacking Pakistan, mm-hmm. and he said it again at his acceptance speech. And then we see that now, U.S. making mm-hmm. incursions across the border mm-hmm. into Pakistan, and as sort of, you know, boding for what is coming. Also, possibly for Secretary of Defense could be Richard Holbrooke, who was assigned by the Carter administration to Indonesia, where he supported the Indonesian genocide against the people of East Timor. And Holbrooke is openly aligned with Wolfowitz mm-hmm. and the neocons. And, you know, of course, there's also the possibility that Colin Powell, a war criminal, mm-hmm. an open war criminal, mm-hmm. would be named as Secretary of the Defense or some other secretary. We talked about Eric Holder and, you know, Ed Rendell in Pennsylvania is going to be named to something, and he was the vicious mayor of Philadelphia, now the governor, who's responsible for one of the most brutal wars against the African community. The situation in Philadelphia is just unspeakable in terms of the conditions African people face and the murders. And then, you know, you look at, like, Mumia Abu-Jamal, the attack on MOVE, what, you know, Pennsylvania represents. And Rendell is going to get some position. Daley is going to get some position. Mm-hmm. Mayor Daley, vicious in Chicago. These are some of the people that...
Susan Rice has to be identified as well, of course. And Susan Rice was a person under Clinton who is associated with the decisions to attack the Sudanese, the pharmaceutical company in Sudan, and is associated also with the murder of President Kabila of Congo. So there's a notorious crew that we're looking at.
Can you just say quickly something about her?
Susan Rice is an African woman. She's not related to the other Rice. She's not related to the Rice that's already in power. But
that's right.
Susan Rice, and Google her. Yeah, she's.
Yeah, can I say something about her?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was recently in Kigali,
awesome.
And there have been where she basically had a press conference to say that there is no evidence that the Rwanda government is involved in a war in the Congo, when there are countless reports, including UN reports.
Yes.